Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important stories and conversations of the day. Now, we've been looking at human rights as an issue in many of the episodes that we've had over the last couple of months. And today we continue that with a very personal look at somebody who's been championing human rights in the country. My guest tonight is Francis Johan. He is a commissioner from Suhakam with the National Human Rights Commission. He started off in 2013 and is coming towards the end of his term. He's just got 1 month left, so we caught him just before he ended his term. Thank you so much, Francis, for joining us. Let's talk a bit about you as a person before we get into the issues. You're from Sarawak. Tell us about where you grew up and the time. You were born in the early 50s, though you look much younger than your age. Tell us about that time and what was it like growing up in Sarawak in the 50s?
Yeah, thank you, Sharad. I was born in Kampung Sarasot Bau, which is a Bedayuh Kampung, about 70 kilometers from Kuching. I was brought up until I was born in 1953. And at the age of seven, we go to school. We walk to school about 1 hour from the farm.
Your parents were farmers?
Farmers,
right?
Okay. Barefooted,
right?
So we started school in from primary one to primary four in those days. So after primary four, I went down to Bau boarding school from primary five to primary six at St. Stephen's School, Bau.
So is this unusual? I mean, were many young kids, especially children of farmers, having access to education? Was it a story, was it exceptional, or was it in fact something that many kids had access to?
In those days, it is an opportunity for us because the school started late. In fact, I was the third batch to go to school.
Only the third batch?
Yes.
Okay.
So, and then after finished primary six, I passed my common entrance exam. Then I go to Bau Government Secondary School in Form 1 to Form 4, which is also in Bau. I was then quite active in sports and athletics. So I had really a very enjoyable student life.
Okay, so this period, Sarawak is actually not part of Malaysia yet, right? At some point in your story, Sarawak goes from being a territory on its own to being a territory now incorporated, 1963.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Into the state of Malaysia. Right?
Yeah. So Sarawak was, as you know, the history from 1841 under the Brooks, for the Brooks family for 100 years, and in 1946 became a British Crown colony after the Second World War ended, until become independent in 1963 through Malaysia.
Do you remember the time? Do you remember the conversations your parents must have had about, you know, whether they wanted to be part of this thing called Malaysia, or whether they didn't want to be?
No. In fact, at that time, even my parents were not aware. So even when I grew up, until when I was even in a student, until 1963, 64, there was a confrontation with Indonesia. That I remember, 63, 64.
Confrontasi, yeah.
Confrontasi. But the formation of Malaysia, we never discussed. Nobody told us about it until I go to secondary school. Then I learned about the history of Sarawak entering Malaysia.
Do you find that extraordinary? I mean,
yes.
I mean, you as a man who's legally trained and, you know, you got your university degree or your law degree from University of Malaya. Do you think, looking back at now, especially now there's a lot of discussions about the Malaysia Agreement 1963, that, you know, that people should have been unaware, that there were people of Sarawak who were unaware
Yes,
of this.
We were in the rural areas, you can imagine. We don't read newspapers. If the teachers didn't tell us any development, we don't know. So, in fact, in 1963, I was in the kampung. It was only in 1964, 65, when I come down to the town in Bau, which is a very small town. It's a mining town, famous for gold mining. And, you know, it was only then that we learned a bit about how we, you know, by 64, of course, we were already in Malaysia. Then we learned about the history through history books. Very brief.
Okay, yeah. So your story is also, I mean, the story of your scholastic achievement, also extraordinary in its own day, you know, and going off to university. But in the middle of this story, is something happened to you. So you were saying that you were a sporting very sporty young man, but you had a brush with a disease that affected your spine.
Oh, yes. I have been, in fact, from my primary school days, I've been active in football, athletic, and continue from my secondary. And in from secondary, we stayed in boarding school at Bagaman Secondary School. And it was in 1969, in June 1969, that we had the inter-secondary school sports meets in Kuching. So it was a preliminary round. I qualified for the final, 400 meters. And then, but upon returning to my school in Bao, I had fever for 3 days. On the fourth day, I had pain in the back. And by afternoon, I noticed that my foot started to get numb. And by noon, it rises to my chest. I was not able to walk. I was rushed to hospital in the taxi, entered a clinic, and government Kuching Sarawak General Hospital in 1969, 4th of July, 1969, admitted. So after 2 weeks, the fever was gone, but I couldn't move. I was paralyzed from the chest. I couldn't go back to school. I stayed there for 6 months. So at the end of the 6 months, I was discharged. And then fortunately for me, somebody helped me to get a new school in Kuching.
Right. I mean, your story is a story of some wonderful chance opportunities that are, you know, that were given to you or that you had access to that allowed you to overcome your disabilities in many ways and then continue to have an active scholastic life that took you to University of Malaya. Very quickly, once you're in University of Malaya, you were there in 1974, you finished your law degree, and then you embark on trying to get a job. Yeah. Tell us about that. I mean, the legal thing plus the disability issues.
I graduated, I went to University of Malaya from 74 to 78. Mm. It's a 4-year law course. And after graduation, I have high hopes to get a job back in Sarawak. I went back. I was interviewed for a few posts, including a magistrate. I was qualified. In fact, I graduated with second class upper. But unfortunately, I was not selected despite the vacancy there. And later on, I learned it was due to my disability. I was not selected because in those days, you have to do circuit duties. But to me, it is a transport problem, not about to do the job.
And that's a very interesting point, right? And this is something we'll come back to later. The way in which people perceive disability and what the actions they take as a consequence of their false perceptions of the problem. The problem often is not the disabled person. It is the structures around them, the lack of supporting structures, isn't it?
Yes, quite true.
Okay, now very quickly, you were then in the legal service and you were and rose to the position of a deputy state attorney general. And as I understand it, there's a complex reason why Sarawak has its own, you know, AG's chambers. But tell us, I mean, that legal experience, did it help you become a better human rights commissioner?
Definitely. After graduation, I managed to get a job in the Kuching Municipal Council first as a magistrate for 3 years. I was conferred powers, but I was on the post of assistant secretary. Then I became a legal officer. Then I went from there, I was transferred to State Attorney General Office. First as senior legal officer, and then as a deputy State Attorney General in 2009 for 2.5 years. Definitely, my experience has helped me in my work as a Suakam Commissioner because I was familiar with the laws, with the policy of the state government, many of which affects human rights. And so that serves as a good basis for me to understand human rights in a better way and at the same to read. So give me an advantage.
Right, OK. We'll take a short break. We'll be back with more. I'm speaking to Francis Johan. He's the commissioner with Suhakam, the National Human Rights Commission. Stay tuned. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Francis Johan. He's a commissioner with Suhakam, the National Human Rights Commission. And he's serving out his term, his second term. It's at the tail end of it. Just 1 month left, and we got him here before you left. And it's very important, actually, to get your perspective. on what is specific to Sarawak. What are the challenges, especially at a time when the Federation is under a lot of pressure? There's a lot of state rights discourse. People are talking about, you know, Sarawak for Sarawakians and so on and so forth. Your 6 years at Suhakam, tell us about that. Did you work specifically on Sarawak issues, or were you also dealing with more national issues?
No, actually, as a Suhakam commissioner, we both deal with national and also with state issues. It's just that Suhakam has a headquarters in Kuala Lumpur with a branch office in Kuching and another branch office in Sabah,
yeah,
in KK. So I look after the sort of the commissioner in charge of the Sarawak branch office. So we have meetings once a month. I go to KL for our meetings, and then I attend programs wherever I can, apart from the normal meetings. But in Sarawak, we have our own, with our own programs, which we organize based on the budget allocated to us. So right. Actually, we
and you've
with,
had your budget slashed in recent times, haven't you?
2 years ago, yes, but that is affect us all.
Okay, I want to ask you this. You say that as part of your work in the legal service, you understood the relationship between government policy, the laws, and also human rights.
Yeah.
What are the big, big-ticket issues for Sarawak in terms of human rights? What are the big things that, as people from outside of Sarawak, we need to be conscious of?
Yes, in Sarawak, on top of the list will be the rights of indigenous people, or natives, we call them. Rights to native customary land, also it also access to certain facilities, you know, the basic facilities. Now, apart from that, we also have issues relating to people who are born and raised and live in Sarawak, but they are considered as non-Malaysian citizens, bukan warga negara. Why? Because they don't have the documents, birth certificate, identity card, for various reasons. Because they may be born from mothers who are maybe foreigners working in Sarawak, but not legally married to a local. Or some may be abandoned. Some may be born to parents even in Sarawakian, but they live in the rural areas. They do not have birth certificates. So they are classified as bukan warga negara. So when they go to the town, they are just considered as a foreigner, as a non-natives. I mean, a non-Sarawakian, you have to, just like the illegal immigrant.
So, okay, let's take each of them in turn, right? And I'm very interested in the fact that you yourself come from rural Sarawak. And this is an extraordinarily large territory. I think it's, in fact, dwarfs the peninsula. The peninsula is not as big as the territory of Sarawak. So we're talking about a huge area.
Yeah.
We're also talking about, you know, low levels of density in the rural areas, so dispersed communities and such. Do you think that rural people in Malaysia are often shortchanged when it comes to basic amenities, to infrastructure, to some of the things that us in the cities take for granted?
Definitely, because if you live in the rural areas, depending where you are, where there's no road transport, you depend on the river, like in the middle of Sarawak or in the upper region, then you have very little access to normal basic facilities, you like your roads, your schools, clinics, and all that. They may be, but they may be scattered around town. Yeah, but in my case, we were quite lucky for those who live nearer to Kuching or outside Kuching, especially the Bedayuh community. I belong to the Bedayuh community, or Lendayak, they call it. Outside Kuching, we are accessible with road, even though we have electricity, even though it comes at a later stage. And last few years, we also have pipe water supply. Before that, we depend on gravity feed on the mountain. Well, in those days, there's no direct road to the kampung, so we have to walk for about 1 hour in order to go to Bau Town, then catch a bus for another half an hour ride.
Right.
So that's where the situation.
Okay, that's the reality. I mean, in fact, recently on the show, we spoke to the daughter of Kam Agong, and also the son-in-law, Kam Agong. She, of course, has become an icon for the question of maternity health in Sarawak. Is that something that you're concerned about, that particular case, and also what it means for Sarawakians, the lack of some basic amenities for ensuring maternal health?
Yeah, definitely, because reasonable health is one of the human rights issues which we need to tackle especially in rural areas. There are clinics set up, but you know, for those who have no transport available, that can be very critical when they fell ill, because some of them may depend on river transport. And there are cases where they are on a stretcher, they are not able to go into the river transport because or either speedboat or longboat, you know, take them to town. So this may delay. And in some cases, you know, they just have nowhere to go. And so that is the situation we find in some parts of Sarawak.
Okay. Sarawak is an extraordinarily rich state. I mean, as a territory, it's got natural resources that have been exploited quite vigorously. Why hasn't it, from your viewpoint, why hasn't it gone to ordinary people?
Well, there are various reasons. Because of the vast area of the state, only certain areas are reachable by road and all that. And also, there are bound to be areas in the rural part of Sarawak which have no basic facilities. Even if they have, it's like I said, it's scattered. Basic facilities in terms of roads, clean water supply, electricity, and schools, medical facilities, and all that. It is various factors. It depends on, again, on your leaders who represents you.
Right, and that's a very important point. Yes. Is there a lack of political will among the Sarawak elite, political elite, and also federal political elite to deal with issues like native customary land rights, with basic amenities, with the disenfranchisement of people who are clearly Sarawakians because they are born there or have a parent who is there, but have not been able to get the certification? I mean, is it a lack of political will?
I would not want to generalize it as a lack of political will. It depends on the issues we're dealing with. When it comes to land matters, we already have our Sarawak Land Code, which was 1948. And of course, before that, we have the other older codes, but it was codified in 1958. And with it, where there are certain restrictions on how you can create native customary rights to land. You know? So there's a cutoff date, 1958, and that. And this continues until today, even though there were subsequent amendments to it, and there are issues with regards to reserve customary forests, and you know, even goes up to the federal court, where the court held that those reserve customary forests, because it is not cleared, the custom has no force of law. So, of course, there was attempts to amend the land code just 2 years ago, but to recognize certain aspects of the rights over the customary forests. But there are still issues which crop up because it is not an automatic recognition. You still have to apply.
Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll be back with more. My guest tonight, Francis Johan, is Commissioner with Suhakam. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Francis Johan, is Commissioner with Suhakam, the National Human Rights Commission. We're talking about Sarawak, where he hails from, and what's going to help propel the human rights agenda. You listed several issues, Francis, just now. Native customary land rights issues, basic amenities, dealing with people who are clearly Sarawakian, who have been categorised as non-citizens, and so on. The question is, what would advance the human rights agenda in Sarawak? What was necessary? We've had political change in most of the country. The state government remains in the hands of parties that were aligned to Barisan Nasional in the past. And there's a state election coming up, perhaps in the next 2 years. The question really is, beyond politics, what would help propel the human rights agenda in Sarawak?
Well, actually, all this was since Suhakam has been formed, since 2000. We have been involved first with awareness, public awareness, and education on human rights issues, because we have to educate the people, explain to them what are human rights, their various aspects. Different groups have their own rights. So that is what we have been doing all this while. And then we have, of course, have specific programs with certain groups, and we have talks with the government agencies and others. So we try to create a situation where human rights would thrive and grow. And we, of course, we use international standards as our basis. But we have sessions with the government agencies and also the government to try to sign or ratify certain human rights conventions. But so far, we managed to sign 3. And the others, we continue to advise the government wherever we can on the law and policy and programs.
How rich, how strong is civil society in Sarawak? Because, you know, a lot of us, when we talk about civil society in Malaysia, we're often talking about Kuala Lumpur-based groups or Penang-based groups. You know, we rarely hear from the Sarawakian side of that story.
Is it strong? We do have NGO or civil society organizations, but on a smaller scale. In fact, we have diverse stuff. We have the welfare base, we have the community base, and we have others who champion human rights on a bigger scale. So there are a variety of them, and depending on issues we are raised. They are there, they are around, they speak up, but maybe not as vocal as those in Peninsular Malaysia, especially Kuala Lumpur.
And why is that?
It's because of the, maybe of the issues they are dealing with. Like I said, if you are dealing with social welfare issues, you may be talking about rights of persons with disabilities or rights of children or rights of the woman, but on a local scale.
What about the state government itself? Under Tan Mahmud and then subsequently, has the state government in Sarawak, is it responsible for dampening civil society in it, you know, keeping it from growing?
I don't think so, because civil society, as you know, they are registered under the Registrar of Societies, you know, the ROS, as a registered organization. They are free to do what they like within the scope of their registered organizations. The government does not interfere, as far as I know. With the growth of civil society, it's how they react. But it is if you are dealing with certain issues, it's how you approach the issues, how you advocate it, and how you deal with the government agencies and others. I think that is about it.
Okay. Let's turn our attention away from Sarawak for a while and go back to the issue, that story of a disability, that you've turned into a wonderful story of, in fact, conquering the problems that you have on a physical level. You are, you know, an lead or advisor to some organizations within Sarawak that help people with disabilities. In fact, one of the key institutions is the Cheshire Home, I believe in Sarawak, that helped you achieve the success that you've had in your life.
Yes, like I said.
Let's talk about that.
After I was discharged from the hospital in December 26, 1969, I have nowhere to go. Fortunately for me, Sarawak Cheshire Home just opened a few months earlier. I was admitted there as a resident. From there, they sent me to school. They provide food accommodation for me. I stayed there for 4 years, from 4 to 6. So that's how they helped me a lot.
And it had just opened. Cheshire Home had just opened.
Yes, in those days.
Okay, looking at the issue of the rights of the disabled, what is the scenario for Malaysia now? Have we given the people with disabilities enough in Malaysia? Have we worked hard enough to enable them in terms of mobility, in terms of access to justice, all those issues?
Well, as you are aware, Malaysia is a signatory to the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, the UN Convention. And before that, in order to prepare for that, to implement it, we have passed the Persons with Disabilities Act 2008. And we have our policy and plan of action on the rights of persons with disabilities. So over the years, even before this act came into force, we already have our administrative programs. And to date, the government has done a lot to assist the persons with disabilities and others who qualify.
Because people often say that Malaysia is great. We have great plans, we have great policies on the books. The on paper, it all looks good, but the reality is different. Is there a gap between what ought to be and what is the reality for disabled people in Malaysia?
Definitely, yes. But I just want to emphasize that over the last 20 years, there's been a lot of improvement. Like I said, the government has provided about 25 different assistance for persons with disabilities and others who qualify. That is the so-called welfare assistance. But apart from that, we have the rights of the person with disabilities as stated in the convention and also in the Act. But that is on paper. But the question is, to what extent does the disabled person able to enjoy those rights? and if they are alleged of discrimination or breach, can they take action to really realize their rights? That is the question mark. Because if you look at the Act, the Persons with Disabilities Act, there is no express provision to prohibit discrimination against disabled people. And the call has been to amend the Act so that we have some means of enforcing our rights. And also, if there's a breach or if there's an alleged discrimination act against disabled person, the victim should be able to seek a remedy, either in court or others. That is missing for the moment.
Okay. In the minute that we have left, you're ending your term as a Suhakam Commissioner. I believe you can't get a third term. Maybe this will be applied to our politicians as well. I want to ask you, what's your hope for human rights in Malaysia? What's your one thing that you would like to see in the near future?
I think there's hope. You see, we have been involved in the UN before as human rights, on the Human Rights Council, and we have set up Suhakam since 2000, and we have continued to raise the public awareness, and at the same time, the human rights region have grown. But of course, we want to have it much bigger and to be a model, if not a model, at least improvement in human rights situations. And in the past, we have faced many challenges, even at Suhakam, to try to get the government to sign not just three, but the other six remaining human rights conventions. So we are doing our part and trying to discharge our duties and responsibilities as a human rights, national human rights institutions. And we hope that with the new PH government, having regard to their election manifesto, they try to lift up the image of the country as a defender of human rights. That is my hope, that with the new government, we can have better laws and policies which will really promote and protect human rights for all.
Thank you so much. And thank you personally. My personal thanks for being a Human Rights Commissioner and bringing your perspectives to the Commission and to Malaysia.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Francis Johan. He's a Commissioner with Suhakam, the National Human Rights Commission. He's got just 1 month left before he leaves that work, and I wish him great success in his future endeavours. This is Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin, only for Astro One.